This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News covering Gardner and the towns of Ashburnham, Hubbardston, Petersham, Templeton, Westminster, and Winchendon. This program is sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Ashburnham, Petersham, and Winchendon. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Gardner News covering the week of July 9th through July 15th. This is Dave Russell reading with Risa Sachs. Our first story, Narragansett keeps $26.9 million budget intact ahead of district-wide vote. This is written by Amelia Cardona. With no members of the Phillipston Select Board in attendance on July 14th, the Narragansett Regional School Committee recertified its $26.9 million fiscal 2027 budget and moved ahead with plans for an August 3rd district-wide meeting where voters from both towns will vote on the district's budget. The school committee had invited both the Templeton and Phillipston Select Boards to join the July 14th meeting to finalize the district-wide meeting date and appoint a moderator. While Templeton officials attended, Phillipston officials were unable to do so. School committee chair Jennifer Smith said the district had been informed via email beforehand that no member of the Phillipston Select Board would attend. She added that the board also did not object to holding the district-wide meeting on August 3rd. Smith said the nearly $27 million budget would maintain current service levels and avoid cuts to programs such as the MVP program and athletics. I've watched this district tighten belts again and again to accommodate students' rising costs while trying to maintain services to students. So we're at a point where the services we're talking about cutting for students are services that are directly tied to their social, emotional, and school success and well-being overall, she said. I believe that this remains the correct budget. During the meeting, the school committee and Templeton Select Board voted to appoint Joshua Smith as moderator for the district-wide meeting. Smith has served as Barrystown moderator since 2019 and has been a director of the Massachusetts Moderators Association for the past 4 years, according to Superintendent Dr. Christopher Cassavant. Smith also served as moderator for a joint meeting for the district in 2021. The district-wide meeting was triggered after Phillipston voters failed to pass a $208,020 school budget override at a special election on June 30th. Templeton voters approved their portion of the school budget, $9,975,010, during their annual town meeting in May. Both towns must approve the same budget for it to take effect, and since that did not happen, a joint town meeting is required to set the school district budget. Because the budget has not been finalized, the State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has set a monthly spending limit for the school district, which is typically called a 1/12th budget. The 1/12th budget was put into place on July 1st, the start of the fiscal year, and will remain in place until the district budget is set. The two-town school expenditures are based on each community's student population. Because the towns share a school district, both municipalities must approve the school budget before either town's budget can be finalized. Our next story, Gardner Elm Street Project nears end, upgrades aim to boost safety. This is written by Stephen Landry. A major road construction project in Gardner is nearing completion. Motorists who have traveled along Elm Street recently have likely noticed the steady progress being made on a major infrastructure project aimed at improving safety, accessibility, and travel options near the former Elm Street School and Helen May Sauter buildings. Funded through a state grant of approximately $1.4 million, the Elm Street Resurfacing and Sidewalk Improvement Project is transforming the corridor between Temple Street and Cross Street. Sidewalk work is nearly complete, with roadway paving expected to follow soon, according to city officials. The overall project is on track to be finished by the end of the summer. The work is part of the state's Safe Routes to Schools infrastructure program, which focuses on making streets safer and more accessible for pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists, while improving connections to schools and community destinations. In addition to repaving the roadway, the project includes a wide range of upgrades designed to improve safety and accessibility. Crews have been replacing sidewalks and installing ADA-compliant crossing ramps and pedestrian crossing signals. The project also includes multimodal transportation improvements intended to better accommodate people traveling by foot, bicycle, and vehicle. According to project information provided by the city, improvements include new and reset granite curbing, concrete sidewalks, curb extensions, raised crossings, rapid rectangular flashing beacons, and new roadway signs and pavement markings. These features are intended to increase visibility at crosswalks and enhance pedestrian safety, particularly in the area surrounding the former elementary school, which is home to the city's community youth center. The project carries a construction bid price of $1,422,779 and began construction during the summer of 2025. Jeffrey Goyne is serving as the resident engineer overseeing the work. City officials have highlighted the project as an important investment in Gardner's transportation infrastructure. Beyond improving the appearance of the roadway, the upgrades are expected to create safer travel and conditions for students walking to and from school, families using the corridor, bicyclists, and motorists alike. As crews continue their work over the coming weeks, motorists and pedestrians may experience occasional construction-related disruptions. However, with sidewalks nearing completion and paving expected shortly, residents can expect to see the project move soon into its final stages. Once completed, the rebuilt Elm Street corridor was expected to provide a smoother roadway, upgraded pedestrian facilities, and enhanced safety features. Now we turn to Hubbardston. Hubbardston restarts search for town administrator after PIC withdraws. This is written by Amelia Cardona. The search for a new town administrator will resume in Hubbardston, as the candidate the select board chose has accepted a role in another town. Alex McGee was one of three finalists, and the select board interviewed all three on May 11th before deciding to offer McGee the position in early June. On Monday, July 6th, the Chelmsford Select Board offered McGee the position of town manager of that town, and he accepted, according to Melody Green, Hubbardston town clerk. While McGee does not have town administrator or manager on his resume, he has nearly 15 years of experience working in municipal government. His most recent role was deputy town manager in Andover from September of 2025 to February of 2026, and before that, he was the deputy town manager and finance director in Arlington for 2 years, from February 2023 to October of 2025. McGee was also the finance director of Hamilton between May 2021 and February of 2023. McGee's first government job was with the city of Lowell, where he rose through the ranks for 8.5 years, from January of 2013 to June 2021. He started as the administrative assistant to the city manager's office in Lowell and ended as the deputy director of public works before leaving to work as the finance director of Hamilton. Christina Ellis, Hubbardston's town executive assistant, said town officials will now have to regroup to discuss their next steps in the search for a permanent town administrator, whether to ask the previous members of the search committee to participate again or to reopen the committee for new volunteers. Sean Fitzgerald has been the interim town administrator since January 5th, after the departure of former town administrator Nathan Boudreau on December 26th of 2025. After McGee declined the town's offer, the select board voted to extend Fitzgerald's interim contract another 6 months until December 31st of 2026. Now a story involving the town of Lancaster. Sousa Baranowski correction officers indicted for allegedly beating prisoners. This is written by Brad Patrician of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. Attorney General Andrea Campbell has indicted multiple correction officers for allegedly beating two shackled murder convicts who had stabbed officers with homemade knives in 2024 at Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center in Lancaster. The alleged misconduct contained in these indictments does not reflect the department's standards and values, according to Sean Jenkins, commissioner of the Department of Corrections. That was according to a statement written to the Telegram and Gazette on Friday, July 10th, in which he noted the department had referred the case to Campbell following an internal investigation. The charges came 2 years after Worcester County District Attorney Joseph D. Early Jr. charged three inmates in a violent attack on September 18, 2024, that was caught on video. The case spurred calls from correction officers for better working conditions. The inmates, including Jose Crespo, who was serving four concurrent life sentences for the 2016 murder of Kevin Cabrera Soto of Fitchburg, were indicted on serious charges after two officers were stabbed and others hurt. Crespo and another convicted murderer, Jeffrey Tapia, are accused of stabbing and seriously injuring a correction officer with homemade knives, with Crespo also accused of stabbing a second officer. According to indictments secured by Campbell's office last month, shortly after the attack was quelled on September 18th, four corrections officers assaulted Crespo, Tapia, and a third inmate who was charged in the attack. Three of the officers were arraigned in Worcester Superior Court Friday, July 10th, court records show, including one officer whom Campbell charged in a separate prisoner assault earlier this year. That officer, Stephen Cobb, was arraigned in January on a charge of beating Elijah McConsky, a convicted murderer, at Sousa Baranowski in May of 2023. Cobb, who was released without a requirement to post bail in January, was released July 10th without a bail requirement on a condition he stay away from the alleged victims. Prosecutors in court documents allege that Cobb, on September 18th of 2024, kicked Crespo with a booted foot in the chest area shortly after the attack while Crespo was shackled and in the fetal position in a holding cell. Prosecutors also allege that correction officer Sean Gould used his knee to forcefully strike Crespo in the abdomen shortly after he'd been placed in wrist and ankle shackles. A third correction officer, Paul Beery, is accused of slamming a shackled Tapia into a concrete wall. A fourth correction officer, Matthew Velotti, has yet to be arraigned on an allegation of striking the third inmate charged in the 2024 attack, Heriberto Rivera Negron, in the face and twisting his leg. More detailed allegations against Velotti were not immediately available in court records, nor was contact information for his lawyer. Lawyers for Cobb and Gould could not immediately be reached for comment Friday afternoon, July 10th. According to the Department of Correction, Cobb and Beery are detached without pay. Gould is on administrative assignment outside Sousa Baranowski, and Velotti resigned in August of 2025. Cobb and Beery face felony charges of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, as well as a misdemeanor and charge of a civil rights violation. Gould faces a single misdemeanor assault and battery count, while Velotti is charged with two misdemeanor counts of assault and battery and a civil rights violation. A lawyer for Beery, Kenneth H. Anderson, told the TNG Friday, July 10th, that his client is one of the most well-respected employees in the correction department, with 28 years of unblemished service. He completely affirms his innocence in this matter, said Anderson, adding that Beery has never had a use-of-force complaint sustained against him. The AG's statement of the case did not detail the specific evidence against the officers. The TNG has reached out to spokespeople for Campbell for comment. Jenkins, the correction commissioner, wrote in his statement that the department is committed to preserving the safety, rights, and dignity of every person in our custody and continues to expect officers to serve with the highest level of professionalism. Violence at Sousa Baranowski, the state's only maximum security prison, has been a recurring problem. This is Community News from Gardner. It's a weekly production of the Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Now, Risa Sachs joins us. She has more Gardner news for you. Risa?
Thank you, Dave. And we'll begin this segment of this evening's program with a story about enhanced safety. It's by Stephen Landry of the Gardner News. Mount Wachusett adds help points to boost campus safety. Students, employees, and visitors at the Gardner campus of Mount Wachusett Community College now have a new way to quickly reach campus police in an emergency. The college recently installed and upgraded emergency blue light call boxes at three locations on campus: Parking Lot B, Parking Lot C, and the campus track, as part of its ongoing efforts to enhance safety. The highly visible blue call boxes provide a direct connection to the MWCC Campus Police Department. Users simply press an emergency button to be connected with dispatchers who can assess the situation and send officers to the scene. The call boxes, which are officially called help points, are manufactured by Code Blue and designed to withstand extreme weather conditions. The Michigan-based company was founded in 1989. College officials said the devices are especially useful in outdoor areas where cell phone service may be unreliable and can help emergency responders quickly determine a caller's location. The project was made possible through a $65,000 investment of the college's strategic funds, according to Nia Carrigan, the school's Associate Director of Communications and Public Relations. Our campus police and public safety department is always looking for opportunities to enhance and improve safety across campus, Carrigan said. Maintaining a safe campus has always been a top priority, and we remain committed to continuously evaluating and enhancing our policies, procedures, training, and technology for the benefit of our students, faculty, staff, and visitors. Campus security only a push of a button away. Creating a safe and welcoming learning environment is one of our highest priorities, said Melissa Croutot, Chief of Campus Police and Public Safety. These emergency call boxes provide another important layer of security, ensuring that help is only the push of a button away. The call boxes operate 24 hours a day and are intended to assist anyone who needs immediate help, wants to report suspicious activity, or has concerns about campus safety. According to the college, the system is designed to improve safety for students, faculty, staff, and visitors, particularly during evening hours. The college's track is a popular public walking location. Public encouraged to inspect call box locations. The blue light call boxes are part of a broader campus safety program that includes licensed special state police officers, security cameras, emergency preparedness planning, emergency notification systems, and safe escorts when available. MWCC's officials encourage members of the campus community to familiarize themselves with the location of the call boxes so they can be quickly used if needed. Anyone with a safety concern can contact the MWCC Campus Police Department at 978-630-9111. In a life-threatening emergency, individuals should call 911. Again, you can contact the MWCC Campus Police Department at 978-630-9111. Our next story is about honoring a local man. It's a staff report in the Gardner News. Edward Jones advisor Eric Chouinard honored by North Central Chamber. Eric Chouinard, a financial advisor at Edward Jones, was honored for his leadership as outgoing chairperson of the Chamber's Connect North Central networking program during the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce's 42nd annual meeting on June 11th, according to a community announcement. Connect North Central is a monthly networking event that meets the last Friday of each month, and it provides opportunities for business professionals to build relationships, share ideas, and collaborate on initiatives that benefit the regional business community. Eric brought incredible energy and warmth to Connect North Central this past year, said Roy Nascimento, President and CEO, North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce, according to the announcement. He led with heart, making sure every business owner who walked into the room felt welcomed, connected, and inspired. His genuine commitment to helping others succeed embodies exactly what our chamber is all about. Eric's impact extends beyond Connect North Central. Eric joined Edward Jones in 2024 and serves clients throughout Gardner and the surrounding North Central Massachusetts communities, helping them with retirement planning, income strategies, wealth strategies, and preparation. He draws on his prior experience in customer relations in real estate and as a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers park ranger. Eric's involvement with the Chamber extends beyond his leadership of North Central Connect. He joined the Chamber in November 2024, shortly after launching his Edward Jones practice, and quickly became an active member of the North Central Massachusetts business community. He was also selected for the Chamber's Community Leadership Institute, a 9-month program that develops emergency leaders through education on community issues, personal leadership development, and collaborative community projects. He was honored alongside his fellow classmates as a member of the Institute's Class of 2026 during the same annual meeting. Eric also serves on the steering committee for Future Leaders of North Central Massachusetts, a chamber program that brings together young and emerging professionals from across the region to connect, grow, and engage with the local business community. Under Eric's leadership, Connect North Central continued to thrive as a vital networking opportunity for chamber members. He created an environment where business owners felt welcomed, connected, and inspired, facilitating introductions, sparking conversations, and making sure every person in the room felt valued. Business professionals are encouraged to get involved. Being involved with the Chamber and leading Connect North Central has been incredibly rewarding, said Eric, according to the announcement. There's something special about bringing business leaders together and watching new relationships and collaborations form. Our region has so many talented entrepreneurs and business owners, and programs like Connect North Central help us support each other's success. Contact information for those interested in joining Connect North Central. The Connect North Central program continues to welcome new participants interested in expanding their professional networks and contributing to the regional business community. Business professionals interested in attending Connect North Central meetings or learning more about chamber networking opportunities are encouraged to contact North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce at 978-353-7600, extension 235. Again, that's 978-353-7600 at extension 235, or visit northcentralmass.com. Next, a story about saving money. It's by Bailey Allen, USA Today Network, New England. Walmart lowers prices on thousands of items, including soda and beef. Walmart announced it is lowering prices on thousands of items this summer. The retailer said in a July 6th press release that customers can expect saving across categories including grocery, household essentials, outdoor living, toys, and apparel at both Walmart and Sam's Club stores. Customers count on Walmart to deliver the value they need every day, and summer is no exception. Julie Barber, Executive Vice President and Chief Merchant at Walmart U.S., said in a statement, "This summer, we're making even more investments in prices with thousands of rollbacks across the products customers are shopping for most, including beef, fresh produce and beverages, grills, pools, toys, and summer fashion apparel." The company highlighted savings on grocery items, including a price drop for a pound of 73% ground beef roll at Walmart from $6.74 to $5.94, a 12% decrease. And at Sam's Club, Member's Mark 82/12 ground beef dropped from $6.17 to $5.97 per pound, a 3% decrease. The price cuts went into effect last week. Shoppers can purchase the discounted items in-store or through Walmart.com and SamsClub.com, the retailer said. In a Truth Social post, President Donald Trump praised Walmart's decision, claiming the price cuts were made at the request of his administration. "This is a huge deal for many millions of Americans who smartly shop at Walmart, which is a truly patriotic company who loves the USA," Trump said in the post. "Walmart is stepping up in a big and bold way, and other retailers should follow the lead of these absolute patriots. Together, we will make America stronger and greater than ever before." Walmart declined to comment on Trump's Truth Social post. What prices have dropped at Walmart? Prices on many household items, grocery products, toys, clothing, and outdoor gear have dropped, Walmart said. In addition to ground beef, Walmart provided the following examples of its nationwide price cuts. Fresh sweet corn on the cob from 68 cents to 25 cents each. Fresh red cherries, 2.25-pound bag, from $11.18 to $5.63. Great value ice cream, 48 fluid ounces, from $2.97 to $2.50. Lay's classic potato chips, 8-ounce bag, from $2.97 to $2.50. Great value disposable paper plates, 200 count, from $9.97 to $8.97. Coca-Cola, Diet Coke, and Coca-Cola Zero Sugar 24 packs from $14.97 to $9.97. Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, Dr. Pepper, and Diet Mountain Dew products 24 packs from $13.97 to $9.97. What prices have dropped at Sam's Club? Sam's Club, a subsidiary of Walmart Incorporated, is, quote, continuing to offer competitive fuel prices and has lowered prices on more than 250 items, including road trip snacks, grilling essentials, and summer entertaining favorites, according to Walmart. In addition to Member's Mark ground beef, here are a few examples of Sam's Club's price cuts. Member's Mark bone-in chicken wings from $2.88 to $2 per pound. Member's Mark beef hot dogs from $12.96 to $10.86. Member's Mark whole bone-in pork back ribs from $3.48 to $3.18 per pound. Where is Walmart located in Massachusetts and Sam's Clubs? There are 48 Walmart stores across Massachusetts, including locations in Brockton, Fall River, Salem, Worcester, and Quincy. Sam's Club, however, does not have any locations in the state. The nearest stores are located in New Hampshire and Connecticut. And that completes this evening's segment of this program. So we go back to Dave with more Gardner news, and I'll be back later for the final segment. So for now, take it away, Dave.
Thank you, Risa. Our next story, Summer Carnival Fundraiser returns to Monty Tech this month. This is written by Stephen Landry. The fairground music and midway atmosphere are returning to Monty Tech this month. The school will host its second annual four-day summer carnival from Wednesday, July 15th through Saturday, July 18th. The event, which will feature exciting rides and classic fairground games, serves as a fundraiser for the Monty Tech Foundation Scholarship Program, according to Katie Whitaker, the school's development coordinator. The foundation is always looking for ways to host little fundraisers that will benefit student scholarships so that we can continue to give out $40,000 or $50,000 a year, Whitaker said. We host a golf tournament and comedy nights, so we just tried this carnival to see what people thought of it. It was very hot last year, but it was very well attended. The event, which will be held in the school's auditorium parking lot, will be set up by Finelli Amusements, which will give a percentage of the ticket sales proceeds to the school. We try to encourage as many people as we can to come out and enjoy the day, and I think we're going to be in for some very nice weather, so that will be helpful, she said, adding that last year's event raised $5,000 for student scholarships. Among the rides scheduled to be set up for the event are the Berry-Go-Round, the Scrambler, the Twister, the Traveling Funhouse, and the 90-foot-high Ripcord, which is billed as New England's only mobile drop tower, according to Finelli, who added that the school's campus made an ideal location for a carnival. We're right along Route 2A, not too far from the highway, he said, and it's a regional vocational school, so this doesn't just spark interest in Westminster and Fitchburg, it's all of the surrounding towns. Whitaker said several faculty members will be volunteering their time to provide families with free golf cart rides back and forth between the designated parking area and the carnival. We do that for tips, and it goes straight to the student scholarships, she said. We try to make it as much fun as possible. Going by what she overheard while driving a golf cart last year, Whitaker said it was clear that families had enjoyed the event. "I remember taking people to and from their cars, and they loved that little service. It was super cute, and there was a lot of alumni bringing their family back," she said. "And it was sweet hearing them tell their kids that this is where Mom went to school and where Dad played football. It's a really nice family moment." The summer carnival would likely become an annual event at the school, Whitaker said. "The Finelli brothers do so much work that it's not a huge lift for us," she said. John Finelli, co-owner of Finelli Amusements, said he hopes the event will become a tradition for the school and for the surrounding communities. "Any event we do, we like to have proceeds go to something that's going to build the community or, in this case, help out students," he said. The carnival has a variety of operating times, ticket prices, and rides for visitors to choose from, which are laid out on the Finelli's website. Our next story, historic Gardner Furniture Building listed with redevelopment potential. This is written by Stephen Landry. A piece of the Chair City's manufacturing history is on the market. The former Rome Furniture Headquarters, a multi-level 60,000-square-foot building at 562 Main Street in Gardner, was recently listed for sale on LoopNet, a commercial real estate marketplace website. The sale is being handled by the Stubblebine Company, which is based in Lexington. "This is such a unique property because of the proximity to Route 2, the industrial manufacturing and storage paired with the showroom retail aspect, as well as the high visibility along Main Street," said Cole Behrens, an advisor for Stubblebine. The current owner spent many hundreds of thousands of dollars renovating the property in order to store and sell high-end furniture to its many customers. Rome Furniture closed in 2019, and the property was then occupied by Manzel Furniture, a Peabody-based distributor which used the building as a storage and distribution plant, according to Behrens. Behrens said the building, which sits on 1.2 acres, holds a wide array of allowable uses for prospective buyers. "This property can be converted to multifamily housing of up to 28 units. It can be used as an industrial warehouse or manufacturing facility, a showroom, many different retail uses such as a gym, and it can be converted to office or flex space," he said. An additional quarter-acre lot located directly across the street further enhances the property's potential for expansion and parking, Behrens added. There is no listed price for the building, which Behrens said was a common practice for unique commercial properties. "It allows the seller to gauge market interest, encourages more direct discussions with qualified buyers, and provides flexibility during negotiations," he said. However, the property was expected to sell in the low to mid $3 million range, he added. "We've already received interest from prospective buyers, which reflects the property's unique characteristics and redevelopment potential," Behrens said. "While specialized commercial assets can take longer to sell than traditional properties, we expect continued interest from users seeking adaptive reuse opportunities in central Massachusetts." Rome Furniture, which was founded by brothers Jim Rome and Buddy Rome in 1945, moved into the Main Street location in 1998. The building, which was built in 1907, was formerly home to the C.H. Hartshorne Furniture Manufacturer. Now, a story in the Gardner News about the Gardner News. The Gardner News to host Meet the Editor event in Templeton. It's written by Sandy Meerndersma. The Gardner News is inviting readers out from behind their screens and into the conversation. The newsroom will host a Meet the Editor event from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Wednesday, July 22nd at Deer Creek Farm Bagels and Breads, 368 Patriots Road in Templeton, where the public will have a chance to connect directly with local journalists, share story ideas, and talk about the issues that matter most. This event is the second in our series. Amelia Cardona was featured at a Meet the Reporter event on June 10th. This session will feature editor Sandy Meindersma and reporter Stephen Landry. Meindersma, who has been editing the Gardner News since 2022, is a Central Massachusetts native with more than 20 years of journalism experience. Landry, the Gardner City reporter, has been covering news in the Chair City for more than 15 years. His work regularly appears in publications across the USA Today network. The event is designed to strengthen the connection between the newsroom and the community it serves, creating space for conversation, feedback, and collaboration. "We want to hear from our readers," Meindersma said. "Whether you have a story tip, a concern in your neighborhood, or just want to learn more about how we cover your community, this is an opportunity to connect. We loved meeting everyone who stopped by to see us at our first session. We hope to meet more readers on July 22nd, Meindersma said. Attendees can stop by any time during the two-hour window for an informal conversation. There's no formal program, simply a chance to meet the people behind the bylines and discuss the stories shaping Greater Gardner. The Meet the Reporter and Editor series is part of an ongoing effort by the Gardner News to engage more directly with readers and ensure local coverage reflects the voices and priorities of the community. Residents, business owners, and community leaders are all encouraged to attend. No registration is required. And we have a sports story for you. Oakmont Lacrosse's generational talent earns second All-American honor. This is written by Jay Guerin. Oakmont Regional rising senior Silas Roy has once again been highly recognized for his outstanding lacrosse play for the Spartans. The latest prestigious accolade for the 17-year-old Roy is being named for the second year in a row as a USA Lacrosse All-American. To be selected as a USA Lacrosse All-American, a player must exhibit superior skills and techniques and possess exceptional game sense and knowledge. A USA Lacrosse All-American is one of the best players within their respective area in the country, while also embodying excellent sportsmanship. In addition to earning USA Lacrosse All-American status during his stellar high school career, Roy has been a three-time first-team Midwatch B All-Star and a two-time Central Mass Coaches Association All-Star. Coach Sean Nally said, "Silas has a super high lacrosse IQ. An excellent student, Roy is already looking into what he would like to study in college and hopefully playing on a lacrosse team." This is Community News from Gardner. It's a weekly production of the Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Now, Risa Sachs joins us once again with the final segment of Gardner News.
Thank you again, Dave. And we'll begin this final segment of this evening's program looking at home prices in the gardening area. It's by Amelia Cardona of the Gardner News. Home inventory rises in Gardner, but sellers still hold the advantage. The real estate market in Greater Gardner area remains a seller's market, despite a slight increase in inventory compared to last year. Rick Healy, owner of Foster Healy Real Estate, said there is still some uncertainty due to fluctuating interest rates, which have slowed activity, but demand persists across housing types and price ranges because more and more people want to buy homes in central and western Massachusetts. While there's uncertainty in the economy due to many factors like the cost of oil, We've still got a good demand in this area, he said. I think people are getting to where the interest rates, They're not expecting the interest rates to be back at 3% anytime in the foreseeable future. So people are getting used to the fact that 6% isn't a horrible rate. Ever since the COVID-19 pandemic, there has been a shift in the real estate market. Healy said more and more people are moving to rural areas where mortgages are smaller for more space. He said while the federal interest rate doesn't directly affect the affordability of homes, it does draw buyers and sellers' attention because it's a sign of future economic stability. What people are looking for is stability and security. And as we get into a more stable economic environment, people's confidence increases, which helps in the decision-making to purchase a house, he said. Before, with all the tariffs, inflations, and ups and downs every week, people didn't feel comfortable to make that decision. What's on the market in the Gardner area? There are 22 active single-family home listings in Gardner in the first week of July, with prices ranging from $244,000 to $749,000, and a median sales price of $372,500. Compared to last year in September 2025, there were 18 homes for sale in Gardner, with prices ranging from $350,000 to the low $500,000s, and a median sale price of $369,000. Healy said there is activity in all six towns that make up the Greater Gardner: Ashburnham, Hubbardston, Phillipston, Templeton, Westminster, and Winchendon. He said buyers are coming from the city and suburban areas. They aren't looking more in any particular town, but more in the area in general. So no town is having more demand than another. As of Tuesday, July 7th, in Ashburnham, there were 11 active listings with a median sales price of $485,000. And in Hubbardston, there were 3 active listings with a median sales price of $575,000. In Phillipston, there are 7 homes listed for sale with a median price of $569,000. In Templeton, 13 active listings with a median sale price of $429,000. Out of all 6 towns, Westminster is the town with the most active listings, with 25 homes on the market and a median sales price of $657,000. In Winchendon, there are 12 active listings and $425,000 is the median sales price as of Tuesday, July 7th. Our next story is about something not so pleasant, but important to know. It's by Bailey Allen and Mary Walworth Holdridge of the USA Today Network, New England. Explosive diarrhea illness cases confirmed in Massachusetts. Cases of cyclosporiasis, a parasitic foodborne illness that can cause quote-unquote explosive diarrhea, are being reported across the United States, including in Massachusetts. The illness, which is caused by Cyclospora chitinensis, a parasite often found on produce, has sickened hundreds of people in at least 18 states since May 1st, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, and state health data. Michigan topped the count with more than 700 cases. Unlike most bacterial foodborne illnesses that resolve within a few days, cyclosporiasis can lead to gastrointestinal symptoms that linger for weeks or even longer, according to the Food and Drug Administration. In Massachusetts, 18 cases of cyclosporiasis have been reported between May 1st and July 7th, according to the state's Department of Public Health, or DPH. The number of cases is consistent with what Bay State typically sees this time of year, the department said. The CDC defines the annual cyclosporiasis season as May 1st through August 31st. However, the department said it anticipates additional cases being reported from this time period, as diagnosis doesn't always occur right after symptoms begin. DPH officials said there are no clear evidence of a cluster or concentration of cases in any particular location or time period in Massachusetts as of July 8th. Cyclosporiasis is generally not transmitted directly from one person to another. In the U.S., people can become sick with cyclosporiasis by eating contaminated, uncooked produce, DPH said. Previous outbreaks have been linked to fresh produce such as raspberries, fresh basil, cilantro, scallions, snow peas, and bagged salad, the department said. States with confirmed cases. As of July 7th, the following states have confirmed cases of cyclosporiasis, according to the CDC and local reporting. Alphabetically, Alaska, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and Wisconsin. What are the symptoms of cyclosporiasis? People typically start noticing the symptoms about 1 week after eating food or drinking water infected with cyclospora, according to the CDC. Most common symptoms of cyclosporiasis are watery or explosive diarrhea, loss of appetite, weight loss, cramping, bloating, increased gas, nausea, and fatigue. Less common symptoms may include vomiting, body aches, headache, low-grade fever, other flu-like symptoms. Caution for foods that caused past outbreaks. State health departments have issued guidance for avoiding the spread of cyclosporiasis, which often occurs in the summer due to contaminated, unwashed produce. Ways to prevent illness. The CDC is advising people to take the following precautions when handling fruits and vegetables. Avoid consuming food or water that may be contaminated with feces. Avoid drinking or cooking with untreated water. Wash your hands with soap and water after using the bathroom and before, during, and after food prep, and after handling or preparing raw fruits and vegetables, and after eating, cutting, or cooking. Wash all food prep surfaces, including utensils, cutting boards, and countertops, before and after use. Wash and peel vegetables before eating them. Scrub produce with skins like melons and cucumbers well, and cut away damaged or bruised areas on fruits and vegetables before preparing and eating them. Refrigerate prepared fruits and vegetables as soon as possible, hopefully within 2 hours. Cook your food when you can, heating food to 158 degrees Fahrenheit, 70 degrees Celsius, or higher, kills cyclospora. While the current group of cases have not yet been linked to a singular outbreak or common food item, health officials have advised extra caution with foods that have been linked to past outbreaks. The following foods should be washed and scrubbed thoroughly with a brush or sponge. Bagged salad mixes and kits, including pre-cut lettuce blends with romaine, iceberg, red cabbage, and carrots. Fresh cilantro, which is coriander leaves. Fresh basil, raspberries, snow peas, and green onions or scallions. How are people getting sick? The majority of people contracted the illness after eating food in the United States, according to the CDC. However, at least 343 cases were from individuals who ate or drank food or water while traveling outside the U.S. within 14 days before getting sick. People who contracted the illness range in age from 5 years to 89 years, with a median age of 46, according to CDC. Cyclosporiasis is not contagious from person to person, but spreads through oral ingestion, usually of fruits, vegetables, and after contact with contaminated feces. So take good care and follow up medically with persistent symptoms. Now to a much happier topic, poetry and cash prizes. It's a staff report in the Gardner News. Cash prizes at stake in Winchendon Library's poetry contest. The Beals Memorial Library in Winchendon is accepting entries for its 7th annual Beals Prize for Poetry. Submissions will be accepted through August 15th, according to a community announcement. The contest is open to Massachusetts residents and individuals from specific New Hampshire towns, including Keene, Swansea, Richmond, Fitzwilliam, Troy, Marlborough, Dublin, Peterborough, Jaffe, Ringe, New Ipswich, Greenville, and Sharon. Entrants must submit an original unpublished poem via email to BealsPoetryPrize@gmail.com. Again, that's BealsPoetryPrize@gmail.com. Only one entry per person is allowed. There is no fee to enter. Poets must be at least 18, and previous first-place winners are not eligible to participate. Judges include past winners, published poets. The judges for this year's competition are poets Sarah Letruneau, Maria Williams, and Carolina Zappal. Letruneau is the 2023 winner of the Beals Prize for Poetry, managing editor at Heart of the Story, Editorial and Coaching Services, and author of Wild Gardens. Williams is the author of White Doe, which won the 2023 Verse Daily Prize, and A Love Letter to Say There Is No Love. Zappal is the current holder of the 2025 Beals Prize for Poetry. Three finalists will receive cash prizes. 10 finalists will be chosen by the judges to read their work at the awards presentation, scheduled for September 24th. Finalists will be notified by September 11th, according to the announcement. Prize money of $250, $100, and $50 will be awarded to the top three finalists. All entries will be judged blindly. For more information, call the library at 978-297-0300 or visit BealsLibrary.org. And that completes this evening's presentation of the Gardner News. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Risa Sachs, reading this evening with Dave Russell. Thank you for listening.
There are more than 1 million English words. Next up, some of them worth talking about.
Not only do we keep creating new words, we keep adding new meanings to old ones. Windows used to be things we opened to let fresh air in or to look out of, not a computer system. And so what then is a mouse? No wonder English is so confusing-er. Yes, confusing-er. E-R. Go online to UrbanDictionary.com and you'll find that it means, and I quote, more confusing than confusing. Yeah. If that's not confusing, consider a simple English word with 403 different meanings. The Oxford English Dictionary, the OED, says it is set, S-E-T. Now, if you are set on learning all 403 different meanings, set aside some time, set yourself down, and get set for a real education, and then look it up in the OED. I tell you, but there's just not enough time for me to help you collect the whole set.
That's enough talk about words. Let's go back to listening to them.